Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Hawk Time Podcast. I'm Nick. Unfortunately, Adam is MIA today. He won't be joining us, propped up by our tech crew, Sam and Ryan. And today, very special guest, Corey.
How's it going, guys?
Pretty good. How are you doing today?
Doing all right? Well. Yeah.
All right.
Glad to be on.
So, brought you on here. You're a little bit different from previous guests. You have just a bit more experience and knowledge about this. So at the end of our last episode, for those who didn't know, we talked about the Black Lives Matter movement, its impact overall, what has it been effective, et cetera. If you want to know more, listen to that episode. But towards the end, we hinted at something more, a more legal side of this, voting, how this affects long-term, how this time in history stacks up in the past. Currently, as of recording, Joe Biden holds a lead in longtime red state, Georgia. He made a run for the longest time in North Carolina, and Texas was close by the time it was called. So these are all states that have been historically red or blue in the past. Democrat, Republican, all same ideals, and they were very strong. They were a very set voting bloc for the Republican Party. You could easily count and guarantee these votes. Recently, though, you've had pop-up cities such as Atlanta have been huge in changing and swinging these states. And it's been rather remarkable to watch. So we have you on today to help walk us through, walk our listeners through. What's changed? What gives? What's going on behind the scenes?
I think starting out, one of the biggest things is how connected society is today. We can share anything at a moment's notice. And however many followers that you have or however many retweets that you get, it reaches, you know, a much larger number than we used to would have had access to. Used to get number, news to the masses, it had to either be through cable TV, through radio, or oftentimes, you know, through word of mouth even. Obviously, you have newspapers, magazines, etc. But all of those platforms are generally... how should I put it? A bit more edited, a bit more polished. And so I think that, especially in you guys' lifetimes, my generation, as I've started to, follow politics more closely, I think that we are more, information is more readily available if you want it. And I think a lot of my generation and your generation want it. And so I think that, you know, certain groups have really played into that interest well, and I think that they've made it much more accessible to your generation to say, here are our ideas. Generally, they are more accepted by a younger demographic, and you've really seen since 2008 with Barack Obama's first run to the White House, a big push for young voters through social media platforms. And, making those individuals feel like they have a voice and that it's a voice that is respectable, as opposed to sometimes what has been shown is like, maybe you're not old enough yet to have a true understanding of how life works, right?
Kind of discredited due to age.
Right. And we've all heard it, you know. We've all been young once, and now I'm getting close to middle age, I guess you could say. And it's just interesting how... You know, experience does go a long way, but experience doesn't always necessarily equate with like a timeline or number, if that makes sense, right? People have different experiences. You guys could be way more experienced in certain parts of life, and you're only 17, 18 years old. I have a 13-year head start on you, whatever, but I might not have experienced those same things, right? And so I think sometimes equating experience with a straight number on a timeline could do a disservice to kind of the diversity of people's backgrounds, just to put it simply.
So it's kind of like with this new generation, young voters, Gen Z has quite a name for trying to get activism, getting their voices heard even before they could vote. You had all across the globe, you had walkouts for climate change. You have more and more activists for different movements who are younger and younger. And obviously now in America, Gen Z, this is kind of the first big election where the majority of Gen Z is able to vote. And I think we're seeing that in these areas. But I think like when it comes to these younger voters. There's always a bit more, like, you have everybody has who like follows this knows that younger voters are leaning more Democratic now, and that's interesting. For one, it's kind of a sign of the times that you just talked about. We have more access to info. We can educate more, and people can form opinions earlier. But it's also a bit strange. You have this strong leaning Democrat kind of viewpoint with this new generation, but it's also a lot of this middle aged generation. Comes to minority voters, people who generally don't vote because, well, you know, my state's been red and I want red to win, so I don't, you know, have to, it's not a do or die. So when it comes to having these not necessarily young voters, we know they're reaching this level of maturity, having this vote now. That's not surprising. What is surprising is you saw a huge spike in Black turnout and Latino turnout, and not necessarily that, like middle-aged Caucasian people. Everyone was out voting, and whether it be for the candidates or different reasons. What do you think has led to kind of this new idea of my voice does matter, or I want my vote heard? Is it product of technology, like you said, or is it something else?
Okay. I think it's a mix of technology for sure, that people are realizing that maybe electorally your voice doesn't stretch as far, because most of us know how the Electoral College works outside of Maine, Nebraska. It's winner take all. But I think honestly that having hard, tangible evidence, especially of the 2018 election, it's ones that we forget about, you know, non-presidential years. It's like, are there really elections? Yeah, there still are. And we saw the House flip strongly Democrat. And I think that young people see, on TV the most, you know, it's the faces of the presidents. You know, it's Trump, it's Obama, it's Bush, all the way back, Clinton, etc. But where change and policy changes really occur is through legislation, right? And that has the furthest reaching impact. And I think a lot of those young voters, a lot of those voters that are not your, Caucasian voters, and yes, like anybody that falls outside of that scope, I think that they've seen some of these grassroots movements and have actually seen tangible change as a result of that. Even in some losing candidacies, we've seen that catch on. For example, like Beto O'Rourke in 2018 in Texas, right? Mm-hmm. He lost, but it was a kind of a sign of the times.
It was a shock for a lot of people.
Right, and it was kind of showing like, okay, like if you look at it on paper, it's a loss, sure. But if you look at it in practice, like that it was even that close, you know, in a Senate race in very red Texas, I think we kind of threw some writing on the wall, if you will, to show us that maybe we shouldn't be insanely surprised in 2020 to see Georgia look the way that it does, to see North Carolina look at least as close as it may be.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a combination of all of those things. And then I also think it's a combination of your generation and mine, I would argue especially mine, because I've seen a little bit more presidencies and leadership than yours. I don't care if you're left, right, blue, red, purple, don't care. I think we've all seen some things that, whether it's our party or not, that we're not big fans of.
Mm-hmm.
And I think regardless of, and I say it oftentimes in class, for those that don't know, I teach 8th grade U.S. history, 10th grade government honors, I've taught APUSH in the past, love politics, love teaching, and I think just something that a lot of my students maybe don't realize is like the 24-hour news cycle is a new thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's really kind of a post 9/11 world that we live in, where before that, when you turn on CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, whatever, the constantly scrolling bar at the bottom of the screen didn't used to be there, mm-hmm. you know? It used to be like, here's primetime news, here's morning news, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And now it's become like this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week cycle that we are constantly exposed to.
Like just even now, like during watching these votes being counted, just during the day, like during lunch, during downtime, walking, you know, through the halls, you know, on the way home, you can check, see how many votes are in. Mm-hmm. Oh, 2,000 more votes are up. It's this idea of like this technology has been like huge and shifting, and it's this post 9/11 world, like you said. I've never lived in this post 9/11 world, but just talking to different people, it's truly like crazy. Like, people don't think a lot about that. A lot of people, even people who lived through it, are just kind of moving on, accepting this technology being so intertwined with their living.
Mm-hmm.
But when you kind of look at it, it's strange, because you have like Twitter, Instagram, etc. Obviously, those were not around before 9/11.
Right.
But like with these rises, it's kind of part of the same idea of never-ending information. I want to go out and say something on Twitter, I can create an account and I can say something on Twitter. If you want to go out, you can go do it. It's very easy to have your voice heard. It's very easy to hear others' voices. It's very easy to gather information. It's very easy to gather faulty information.
Yes.
And it's become more and more of a tool used by politicians, used by people in power, used by statisticians, anyone that can help influence our vote as a whole. And I think you make a great point when saying that. So when it comes to this pre-9/11 world that you brought up, obviously it was a whole lot different before then. And we now, people my generation, some people even before my generation, when you talk about the South, it's the Red South. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But before that, something that confused me for a while and confused a lot of people I know was before, it was the South was this strong Democratic area. And everybody down there, it was always going to go Democrat. And obviously now that's weird. South is Republican. You have North, New York, California, these hubs that they're your centers of Democrat votes. So just for people who don't know, what was this big change and when did this occur?
Without getting too political, because I don't want to inform people's opinions too much, but really I would say it started... President Truman introduced some pretty big civil rights legislation back in the 40s. So for those that don't know, Truman was FDR's VP. Roosevelt passed away. Truman was reelected. Well, I guess elected for the first time, technically. And started to kind of throw around these ideas of kind of like the civil rights movement, kind of throwing out some legislation there. And we saw that carry over from Truman all the way up through probably more people think about Lyndon Johnson when it comes to, you know, civil rights and things like that. So what we kind of saw happen was the Democrats being strong in the South, for sure. If you go back to electoral maps, the South was like, as a whole strip, like what used to be the Cotton Belt, yeah, is strong blue.
It's just blue.
Right. And in large part, it's because the farmers were protected through some of those policies. Democrats really looked at, you know, Southern farmers, and they consistently were able to rely on those votes because many of their policies benefited those individuals. Once Truman introduced some ideas of civil rights, and others then kind of caught on to it, we saw a group pop up called the Dixiecrats, which were basically a Southern group of past Democrats that weren't super huge fans of maybe seeking out equality and seeking out some of those things that some of your civil rights activists maybe were starting to put into play. And so we kind of saw this kind of side group start to form, start to push back, even up through like Nixon running. You might know the name George Wallace, which was a Southern individual who basically made no apologies about it. He was basically just a racist.
Yeah.
And certain Southerners kind of latched on to some of those ideas, just to put it bluntly. So some of the Dixiecrats kind of started to say, well, the Democratic Party maybe isn't representing us anymore because they're introducing some of this legislation or some of these ideas of civil rights and that sort of thing. And so just to make a long story short, it comes down to kind of simple politics at that point, right? You're going to be looking to see how can we capture the most votes possible. And some of those Dixiecrat individuals started to soon lean more to some Republican policies based on how some of the Republican leaders decided to implement some of the thoughts that were out there, to put it simply. Just quick asterisk to make sure it's very clear, by no means am I saying all Republicans are Dixiecrats or that all Democrats are saviors for civil rights movements, but that's kind of how we saw the wheels get turning.
Yeah.
And then politics took over. It stills the same way today, where if you can latch on to a certain voting group, you're going to work as hard as you can to keep that voting group for years.
It's the game within the game within the game. Yeah. When it comes to politics, there's always so many moving pieces. And I think you summed that up really well in a very easy to understand way. So thank you for that. And for our viewers, hopefully they understand that. So you talk about kind of latching on to these voters. So kind of how that links back to the topic of today. Joe Biden, at the current time of recording, Democratic presidential nominee. He made a name for himself trying to grab the black vote, trying to make a push towards people who hadn't always voted or had felt like their vote didn't really matter, and tried to really bring them out. And what we're seeing is it paid off dividends for him. In most swing states, 90%+ of the black vote went to Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's had a huge effect in such tight races. So when you see these groups that are out now voting, where exactly is this just a progression from the past up through now? Should we have expected this? Was this just waiting? Or was this something that Joe Biden kind of put in motion, or Barack Obama maybe, something like that?
I think we can draw a pretty direct line back to Obama's presidency and giving these individuals voices that historically maybe thought that the voices wouldn't be taken as seriously. And so I think that with Obama's 08 election and then 12 re-election, we started to see some energy come from that. I think we saw the energy wane a little bit in 16, because just to be very frank, most individuals were not super pumped about either candidate. You know, both of them have their fan bases for sure, but you know, there were plenty of Democrats that were like, well, I guess I can live with Hillary, and plenty of Republicans that on the primary debate stage in, you know, 2015 into 16, you could have given Republican pundits, you know, 14 guesses, and the 15th might have been
Donald Trump.
Future President Donald Trump. And so I think that all of that kind of plays into it. But so at 16, we kind of saw a little bit of it fall away a little bit. Maybe people not pay as much attention. It was interesting that with the 16 race, we didn't really see, we saw turnout by voters, but I think that we saw some assumption to where some of the polls, very much like this year, were very blue across America. Most of your political pundits had, you know, Hillary winning by about what Trump ended up winning by, about a 306 to 223-ish margin, give or take. It was the other way around, of course, a Trump presidency. And so I think people in 16, maybe some of the voters you're talking about, took it for granted and decided that, well, you know, it looks like based on the polls, we don't need to show up. Obviously, they were mistaken, as plenty of people were. And so I think 2020, Biden and others, other Democratic leaders, really doubled down on the idea that we have to get out to vote. We have to register as many people as possible. We saw it really, really happen, especially in some of those places that you mentioned, like Atlanta. Looking at North Carolina, looking at like Asheville, for example, and other places to try to get as many voters mobilized as possible. And they had evidence to say, if we don't, then, you know, 16 could happen again. Mm-hmm. And that mobilized, it appears to be plenty of people for this year. I also think that pushing more to make voting accessible for these individuals. Yes. Because historically speaking, you know, most of your inner city folks that, just to put it in no uncertain terms, are scraping to get by, in many cases, just to survive, you know, they might not be able to get to the polling place on Tuesday, November 3rd this year, mm-hmm. right? Where this year, and in a couple of past elections, there's been major pushes to not just say, get out to vote, but here's how you do it. Certain public transits are giving free rides to polling places.
Yeah.
Mail-in balloting being obviously, if you're not sure, Pennsylvania and you know, Georgia and others should make it very, very clear that mail-in ballots were used more this year than any election in history. And I think that letting people know that those are viable options to vote with, and that it's actually pretty simple to do as long as you're a registered voter. It comes in the mail and you can sign off, not have to worry about standing in line, especially in a COVID year. And I think it made people realize that maybe voting, one, my vote matters, and two, it can be a lot easier than I thought it could. Because oftentimes in these locations on election day, if the individuals could show up to the polling place, you'd look at 2-3-4 hour wait periods for some of these folks. And, you know, even the most motivated voters might look down and say, is 2-3-4 hours worth it? And so I think all those kind of have combined into, I think I looked this morning, I believe there are 72 to 73-ish million votes currently in for Biden and around 69-ish million for Trump. Yeah. And so, I mean, voter turnout as a whole is is more.
The more voices in the democracy, the better, right? Yeah. So I definitely think that that is a big part. Mail-in balloting, as you mentioned, was huge. You obviously had one our current president who was very adamant, get out, vote in person. And when you look at it, even in strong blue states, like in-person voting was Trump leaning. And that strategy of voting in person worked for him. It worked well. He won it in pretty much everywhere in the country. And then you have the Democratic Party, who eventually ended up nominating Joe Biden, and constantly pushing to, if you don't want to go out and expose yourself to COVID-19, vote through mail. And you had this constant battle over fraud, legality, whatever. That's a whole another topic that we don't even know the end of the story yet. This kind of mail-in balloting, I think, really helped kind of give a voice to these people who traditionally wouldn't have gone. I think that combined with technology, you said it in the very beginning, you have all these big names. One that comes to mind, LeBron James. Everybody knows who LeBron is, you know. You have Serena Williams, like these people of color, for these inner city people that generally can relate to it. They see that, and LeBron, he grew up inner city. So it's like he understands. He's been through the same thing. You have a voice that you know feels your pain, and then came out and said, get out, vote. If you can't vote, mail in. So this technology combined with new ease of access for voting due to this pandemic, I think, led to a perfect storm. When it came to this, and currently it is swinging in the favor of the Democratic nominee Joe, but I don't think this race is over just yet. It ain't over till it's called. There's legal battles to be fought, etc. that moves on. But when it comes to the future, soon, within a couple days of this recording, we will probably know how this year turns out. And definitely within a few months, we will know how it shakes out. But 4 years from now, 6 years, 8 years, 20 years down the line. Obviously, can't know for sure, but if you're the Republican Party, for example, and you're seeing these traditional strongholds where you're guaranteed electoral votes, and you're seeing Atlanta, if you're seeing, you know, Houston, you're seeing Dallas, where do you move from this? Do you think it's going to lead to a, is this something we can look back in history and say it's happened before? Is this something, if it has been, what changed? What was the result?
I think that the Republican Party moving forward, they might have to reinvent their platform a little bit, because some of these safe states, as that we've seen previously, Georgia being included in that, they're starting to get, it's no surprise that your big cities are more blue in those locations, but we saw suburban areas vote even more, at least split, if not some leaning blue in some of the, you know, outlying areas outside of Atlanta, right? And I think that that is something that is showing us a couple of things. Number one, whether people like it or not, you know, 16-year-olds in 2018 are 18-year-olds and are voting this year. And there are a lot of young people that, whether people like how they vote or not, are being mobilized to have their voices heard. And so I think that's part of the reason why voter turnout is just higher to begin with. Number two, I think we look at some of these locations, and a lot of young people, just to put it very straightforward, it's really expensive to afford to live in a downtown location, right? And it's something that we oftentimes think, well, of course, Nashville's more blue. Of course, LA's more blue. They're big cities. Of course, they're going to be. Well, a lot of those folks that are the young people that have some of those beliefs that we've been talking about today, they can't afford to live in Atlanta. So they're living in some of the neighboring suburbs or, you know, nearby. and they're bringing the same political ideologies to those suburbs.
2018, we saw that suburban revolution that's been talked about so much on multiple channels.
Yeah.
That kind of revolt against the current president where they went blue.
Yes. And I think that, that's really what's making those voices heard more. Of course, you look at transplants too, right? A ton of people are moving from bigger cities around the U.S., and going to Texas, for example. And you couple that with some of your immigrant vote who are now voting citizens. You look at almost every border county of Texas down to Mexico, and almost all of them are blue.
Yes.
And so that kind of shows you some of the trends that, you know, some of those people that are transplants, some of the young people who now are finally gaining access to voting, and we're starting to see the blue, instead of it being one county in, you know, a big city, you're starting to see, if you look at the Georgia map right now, you look at Atlanta, and it's not just downtown Atlanta, it's the surrounding 5, 6, 7, 8 counties that are all blue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's showing how those ideas are starting to spread out, and those ideas are being almost solidified by the politicians in those areas to say, we might not win this one, we might not get it in 16 or even 18, but eventually we're going to see some of those local mobilizations, you know, have some pretty big consequences in a favorable light.
So it's definitely going to be interesting to see. So from the other side, if you're the Democratic Party, obviously this is, if you're a Democrat, wonderful news. You're seeing Georgia, Texas, North Carolina. You elated. These long-time electoral votes that go red, that could decide an election like this year, are suddenly looking more and more favorable to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Democrat Party, do you hold with how you're doing? Obviously, Joe Biden was criticized earlier for being much more moderate, conservative than the most Democrats. That probably helped pull out a lot of those voters undecided.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see people, AOC, Kamala Harris, much further down towards the liberal end of the spectrum. If you're the Democrat Party, are you okay with that? Do you think that'll continue to be all right? Do you worry if that could undo some of the pulling of the Republican, generally Republican voters? Do you think that'll hurt the Democrat Party, or do you think they're fine where they are?
I know it's a cop-out answer, but I think only time will tell for a couple of reasons. Obviously, it looks like, as we currently sit here, that former Vice President Joe Biden, unless something pretty crazy happens, is going to be the next president. So obviously, electorally for the presidency in 2020, it seems like the campaign worked. If you look at the Senate race currently, though, and the House race, something didn't work for the Democrats because they were really expecting to flip the Senate or get very close. There's still some races out in Georgia. We're probably going to have two senators up for re-election in Georgia at the same time here soon with the runoff. But you look at those situations, and I think we have to kind of study those closely, because what worked for Joe this year, or looks to be working for Joe, did not necessarily work for the Senate or the House. So they have to really look, and it could be more localized Democratic Party policies that really make the big difference, right? Because sometimes to win the national vote, you have to pull those middle ground people, like I think Biden is probably doing a relatively good job of. But to win those local elections, you have to make sure that you pull those other individuals that maybe, as you said, are more left on the spectrum. Otherwise, some of your, especially younger voters in those areas, might feel like it's just the same old if you're putting a Democrat on the ticket that is just barely left of center.
Yeah, and you just end up with that whole starting over again, a group we don't feel like we're represented, they go off and they start kind of being away from the two parties that we have now.
Right.
Suddenly you have a drastic shift in time. The constant wheels of history repeat themselves, or if not, they at least rhyme. So
yep.
It's great to hear from somebody from your perspective. Obviously, you know a whole lot more than we do. It's great to get like an informed kind of, here's what's happened, like straight down to it, cut and dry. So thank you very much. It's been wonderful. I think the viewers will think so as well. So from the Hawk Time Podcast, from me, from probably Adam, from our tech crew, and big thank you to you.
Enjoyed being on.
Yeah, and remember to check us out at the Hawk Time Podcast on Instagram. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube at the Hawk Time Podcast. Thank you, and tune in next time.